it was a logical flow because bioavailability takes kind of digestibility, and it's able to actually account for not only just the portion of the amino acid that just disappears from the end of the small intestine and just is absorbed, it actually can quantify the portion of that amino acid that went in the first place, and what portion of that amino acid is actually able to be used for other metabolic processes.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible. Corbion's Alga Prime DHA P3, the algae-based omega-3 DHA to boost brain cognition, immune system, and well-being. Adding it to pet food is easier than ever. Bioregen, your partner in yeast ingredients for palatability, immunity, and nutrition. Complete solutions for every pet diet. Learn about the benefits of working with Schooler. Visit schooler.com/pet. That's schooler.com/pet. Young Generation Oral and Gut Health Solutions with antibodies from egg yolk. IGY technology. Research-driven. Pet-approved.
Hello and welcome to the Pet Food Science Podcast brought to you by Wisenetics. I'm Jan Sogodolski. I'm here professor at Texas University. I'm dedicated to bring you the latest insights and discussions in the pet food science industry. Get ready to expand your knowledge and stay ahead with today's episode. And my guest today is Dr. Michalina Crosby, who is a recent PhD, finished a PhD at the University of Guelph, is now a research associate there. She can introduce herself. And today we're going to talk about bioavailability of amino acids, which was part of her PhD project. Michalina, welcome. Congratulations on your PhD. So I always like to introduce our guests themselves a little bit, your story, where you came from, how you, what your PhD was about, what you're doing now, and also what you'd like to do in the future. So welcome.
Thanks, Jan. So I was, I'm originally from Winnipeg, Manitoba. I did my undergrad in animal biology and my master's in swine nutrition and my PhD in canine nutrition, looking at the bioavailability of methionine in both peas and chicken meal and kind of developing that technique for that process in dogs just recently. And I'm currently working as a research associate at the University of Guelph, actually in equine physiology, so a little bit different, but kind of really exciting. Sort of trying to figure out, I love answering questions and I love talking to people and I love learning. So hoping to find something in the future that takes me that way.
You want to talk today about bioavailability of amino acids, especially methionine. So maybe let's get started. Obviously most people going to know what amino acids, what they're important, but what is really bioavailability? Why is this important to be aware, to measure it, and where you came from, why you did in your PhD?
Well, I mean, I've always been kind of an amino acid person. All my master's research was about amino acids, but more kind of quantifying the, ileal digestibilities of amino acids in black soldierfly larva meal for pigs. I kind of got to learn from like the outside in. So, here's how much amino acid is in an ingredient. And then we can do a number of different digestibility kind of methodologies to kind of determine what that digestible portion is. So when we think of like ileal digestibility, that would be that portion of that amino acid that's going to kind of disappear from the end of the small intestine and kind of be absorbed into the body. But kind of where bioavailability is, and so to me it was a logical flow because bioavailability takes kind of digestibility and it's able to actually account for not only just the portion of the amino acid that just disappears from the end of the small intestine and just is absorbed, it actually can quantify the portion of that amino acid that went in the first place, and what portion of that amino acid is actually able to be used for other metabolic processes. That amino acid can go on and participate in sort of protein synthesis. It can also support other kind of metabolic functions. So like with methionine does play a pretty big role in protein synthesis and protein regulation, but also in methyl group and methyl donation and kind of maintaining methylation status in the body. In terms of dogs and cats, that's like synthesis of taurine, cysteine, glutathione, so other antioxidant molecules in the body. So methionine is really, really important. And by measuring bioavailability, we can see the portion, that kind of that percentage of how much we put in, can that animal actually use.
And in which context were you focusing on? Because you said it was more about different ingredients, correct? Is it like novel ingredients and are they different?
So for us, so we used what we call the indicator amino acid oxidation technique, or the IAAO technique, where we can actually we can formulate our diets in such a way that we can actually measure oxidation. And so what we ended up wanting to do is we wanted to know, kind of before I go down that road, what we wanted to know is, in light of all the, you know, the stuff that had been, it's kind of the concerns kind of around DCM and peas and the sufficiency of methionine in peas and, you know, taurine synthesis and how all of that sort of is impacted. We wanted to look at and determine what was the bioavailability of methionine in peas. And we did this over three different studies. So one of them has just been published and the other two are to follow. But looking and trying to quantify, at first we tried to use chicken meal as a reference protein. So, bioavailability, in to test for bioavailability, we need really, really strict diet design. So we need to feed, you know, graded levels of that amino acid. So our methionine in this case, from our ingredient, we call it our ingredient of interest. So from peas, and we need to do the same with our reference protein, which we did with chicken meal. Now, usually, the work for IAO for bioavailability has been done and kind of validated more in pigs. It's also been done in humans, but hadn't really been applied to dogs yet, because in a lot of cases, bioavailability, when we talk about a reference protein and we look at the pig work, that reference protein is usually made of crystalline amino acids. So our reference protein experimentally needs to be 100% bioavailable. So basically you're setting a benchmark that you can therefore compare the bioavailability or your oxidation response from your ingredient in reference to that. So you're kind of being able to calculate kind of like a proportion. But so we thought, well, for us, chicken meal is, it's been used in pet foods for decades. It's really, really well researched in terms of its amino acid composition, its protein quality, all that sort of stuff. What was really important for us as well, for our reference diet is, like I mentioned, they often use crystalline amino acids. So those are considered 100% bioavailable. And with that, those diets are often usually provided in kind of like a mash type format so that they don't undergo any kind of heat processing, minimal kind of physical processing, so that we're not creating any kind of, ideally, we're not damaging any of the amino acids in there so that they will ideally be 100% bioavailable. But we know with dogs typically consume extruded pet foods. So trying to find a way to tell what the bioavailability of, say, peas are in an extruded diet where they're going to eat it, and having to compare that using a reference diet, which ideally is also going to be extruded so that all the other ingredients and things in that diet are undergoing the same processing. So it kind of adds another level to that.
Mm-hmm. So tell us a little bit the rationale, the background in why you did the study, right? Why you looked at bioavailability. So my assumption, what I heard is that it was a study about methionine availability specifically in the context of DCM and so on, correct? In the functional ingredient and so on.
Yeah, the study was basically done to kind of complement a number of other studies that have been done out of our lab. So trying to sort of figure out what is it about peas? Is there something like nutritionally that we're missing that we're just kind of not considering in terms of when we use peas in pet foods? All of our research, by the way, is, you know, just kind of chipping away at different pieces of the puzzle. So this was just kind of one of those pieces of the puzzle. So We know that peas are limiting in methionine. That's just, I mean, all pulses, typically methionine is usually the first limiting amino acid. So we wanted to understand, if we're using peas in pet food, are we, you know, what proportion of that methionine that we already know is limiting in peas can actually go on to use and support other, sulfur amino acid and other methionine related metabolic processes. So we know, for example, methionine and sulfur amino acid metabolism goes on to make cysteine, also homocysteine and taurine is the big one that we were kind of trying to look at and kind of understand what that availability would be. Also, I mean, methionine plays a huge role in, methyl donor status, methylation, epigenetic methylation, all these different kinds of wonderful things. And then also, antioxidants, so glutathione, et cetera. So we wanted to really understand, what's that portion of methionine that can actually be used to, that isn't just, digestible, which we can measure in a digestibility study, what portion of it can do all of these other things?
So what are the current techniques for measuring bioavailability? What are current? What did you use in your study? So tell us a little bit about the methods itself.
So we used, I used the indicator amino acid oxidation technique. So it's been used previously in dog and in dogs for determining amino acid requirements. But it hasn't actually yet been applied to determining amino acid bioavailability of amino acids and ingredients. So the technique is that, it's fundamentally measuring an oxidation response. And we know that we're trying to basically measure protein synthesis, but we measure it indirectly by measuring oxidation because they are inversely related to each other. So if we see more oxidation, we see less protein synthesis and vice versa. So we can do that. The technique actually for, bioavailability has been used in humans and it's kind of coming into that way, but all of it historically has been done in pigs. So,
So what kind of samples? So how does actually process work? So can you tell us a little bit very briefly from, which sample type are you measuring? What is exactly measured? What does the output mean?
So we feed, when we're kind of looking at this, we use like a slope ratio assay approach. So we feed, three graded levels of methionine from both our ingredient of interest. So in this case is peas. And we have to measure that in relation to what we call like a reference protein. So our reference protein, we assume all the amino acids and everything in there to be, we assume 100% bioavailable, or we assume as close to as possible, so that we can, when we measure oxidation, so we do that by feeding a stable isotope, so it's 13C phenylalanine, okay, and dosing that over many meals. And then we can actually collect breath and be able to analyze the portion of the 13 labeled carbon that's going to actually be expelled in breath when we have that oxidation take place. So the whole technique is based on kind of that ability. If an amino acid metabolism, or sorry, protein synthesis is basically inversely proportional to oxidation. So when one amino acid is limiting, then all other amino acids, even above that level, are going to just be oxidized. So it's kind of like the slats on the barrel. Uh-huh. So we can only fill water. You can only fill water in a barrel as tall or as much as the shortest slat.
Okay.
So everything that falls out of the barrel is oxidized, and that's what we're inversely measuring by using this technique.
Okay. Let me ask a few technical questions. So it's obviously a kind of a new assay, right? Or new method used in for dogs. So how reproducible is it? How accessible is it? Which is it easy for any lab to do? Is it something that's specialized equipment?
You do require some specialized equipment, right? We do need an indirect calorimeter. So there are different kind of gas analyzers that you can use to be able to basically take your breath samples and do the indicator amino acid oxidation. But it is a very, very, very highly detailed, like everything has to be done with kind of utmost detail and utmost care. throughout the whole process to make sure that the samples that you're getting are going to actually be accurately representing what you're looking for. Mm-hmm. So in that case, it definitely requires specially trained personnel. It is probably one of the more maybe prohibitive things is it can be very expensive. I mean, obviously stable isotopes are very expensive. It's not really something you'd have to have specially trained client-owned dogs if you were to go that route, because dogs do have to remain calm and relaxed in the chambers and be really happy to eat all the food that you give them and all of that. So in that way, it's that. But we do know actually, I did this over, I kind of was trying to explore this idea of bioavailability of methionine over, three studies and kind of a pilot as well. We were trying to refine the technique.
So just for me to understand completely, so how long do you measure it? So, I mean, so you're feeding it, correct? And then you take samples afterwards, what kind of samples and over which time period?
So we do feed, 13 small meals. The whole process takes about six and a half hours, somewhere in there, about 6 hours. So we do feed meals. The first three meals we feed them 10 minutes apart. So we do that to induce a physiological fed state in our animals. And then every meal after that is fed every 25 minutes. So our first five meals we feed 13 grams per kilo body weight of our diet, and we make sure that our methionine levels and everything is perfectly adjusted. I had to do some supplementation to make sure that was correct. And then in meal six, that's when we start our isotope protocol. So that's when we start feeding. We do just oral on the food dose of 13C phenylalanine, and which is a stable isotope, so it's not harmful at all. And there's no danger to the animals. There's no danger to the people working with the animals, anything like that. And we do that from meal six all the way to meal 13 and kind of a primed constant dose. So our meal six ends up being dosed, as a kind of a bolus dose more of it. And then we kind of do a constant dose to kind of maintain that level of sort of isotope delivery. And then what we do is we start measuring breath samples even before our isotope dose, so we can kind of get a background enrichment of carbon of CO2, and then we are able to collect breath samples. And so we actually can pull breath off the line for each individual animal and actually push it through sodium hydroxide, and that actually traps the carbon dioxide that the animal is exhaling. We do that over like a 5 minute the samples are being collected for a full 25 minutes and okay. So then we can actually trap the CO2, the carbon 13 in our breath sample, and then we can actually liberate it and analyze it, and through a series of calculations we can actually calculate and kind of determine that slope of oxidation and be able to compare those slopes to each animal to sort of determine what kind of the equation and the slope of that line is. And it's the slopes that we compare together.
And how many animals do you need, more or less, per experiment?
In our requirement work we've done, that's been done from my lab that I personally haven't done, they used four dogs. Okay. From each breed. So they did amino acid requirements using four miniature dachshunds, four beagles, four Labrador retrievers. So for my work, we usually used, in one study we used 10, next one we used 9, and then I think the last one we used 7 or 8 dogs. And obviously, all dogs received all treatments, so they were able to also act as their own control, which was really nice.
So since this is a kind of a new technique that is used now for applied for pet dogs, what do you think are the advantages of these methods? And then maybe later the challenges of these methods. So what are the advantages?
I mean, advantages are you're really, really able to actually, determine the actual bioavailability, like the actual portion of that amino acid that animal can be used in that format. So that's like really, really exciting. And I mean, that's really, really valuable because that tells us really like the proportion of that amino acid that can actually go and, have a health benefit or have a health impact on the animal. So that's really exciting. you know, being, you know, really non-invasive, that's also really wonderful. I mean, there's a number of kind of challenges as well. I mean, obviously, like, as I've mentioned, like the technique is expensive to do, but, you know, again, it does provide really, really valuable information. The other aspect in terms of kind of dog is just that that we found that's different from the pig work. So a lot of when pigs have the research has come out used with for pigs with this technique, they're often feeding, you know, kind of a mash type diet. The kind of other added aspect for us is that we do know that dogs generally consume extruded diets. And so obviously there's different levels of processing and how processing impacts raw ingredients. And, you know, obviously we feed dogs a little bit different than we feed pigs, you know. So that does add kind of a different level. But I think that, you know, as we've been sort of working to try and validate this technique, which is really all about trying to, you know, figure out how to design the correct reference diet for it. I think once that actually does happen, though, I think, like, you know, you can apply this to anything. The other part that I guess the only other challenge is that it does only measure one amino acid at a time.
Okay.
So, and it is usually you have to measure what would be the first limiting amino acid in that ingredient. That's usually what we're looking for. I mean, that's what would be most useful in a formulation to know how bioavailable is your first limiting amino acid in that ingredient.
It's time for our famous three. We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
ICC Animal Nutrition, adding value to nutrition. Trow Nutrition, the science of ingredients, nutrition, and blending. Kemin Nutrisurance is your pet food and rendering partner every step of the way. Trusted ingredients, proven performance. Wilbur Ellis Nutrition, we partner with a purpose. Kemin Nutrisurance is compelled to provide safe and delicious ingredients to improve our pets' food so they can have the best quality of life. Every day, they deliver specialized expertise, innovative products, and unrivaled support through the pet food and rendering value chain. From oxidation control and food safety to palatability and nutrition, all the way through a suite of tailored services that support you from start to finish, we ensure you're getting the most from Kemin ingredients. Kemin is compelled by curiosity to ensure pets around the world are living happy and healthy lives.
So maybe just to come back, so what are your overall results ultimately? So you started off with trying to understand the P, you know, the P and availability. So can you tell us a little bit about that and then other observations that you kind of observed in the study?
Yeah, so we found that, I mean, our chicken meal was a poor reference protein. So then we decided that we would, you know, kind of take a page out of the swine work, and we ended up formulating a extruded-based diet that was animal protein-free and supplemented all amino acids on top in solution. Well, all essential amino acids, which were supplemented to 120% of AFCO requirements for adult dogs, and then used alanine to make diethylsonitrogenous, which was important for this kind of research. And then in that study as well, we decided that we would sort of compare, try and determine the bioavailability of methionine in both peas and chicken meal. Since, you know, we were confused that chicken meal was kind of, you know, from our first study, it had a poor bioavailability. But then we also wanted to answer the question of, like, does bioavailability change over time? You know, in the digestibility work, when we do digestibility trials, we do, like, you know, typically like a 7 to 10 day diet adaptation period before we measure digestibility to account for adaptation to fiber and all these different things. Well, we thought, well, peas have high fiber, so let's try and see if that's a thing. So that study was really interesting in that we found actually bioavailability didn't change. What we got after 2 days diet adaptation, which is standard for IAAO, was not different from what we got when we did it after 7 days. So that was really exciting. And then we also found in that case, actually, the bioavailability of methionine in chicken was better than peas in this study. And that was, like, by about, like, you know, 34% or so. So we were like, okay, this is not working. Our basal reference diet with our crystalline amino acids didn't just showed a virtually horizontal oxidation response, which means that basically no protein synthesis was happening. So we couldn't use it as a reference protein in that formulation. So then we decided, okay, we're going to try this one more time. And we changed our basal diet, our crystalline amino acid formulation, to match our chicken diet, which had the highest oxidation, like it had the best response. So it had exactly what we wanted. We said, well, if we match those amino acids to this, it has to get better. And it did, but it wasn't enough for us to use it as a reference diet. But what was actually really interesting there is when we did rerun our peas and our chicken meal, that was from the same diet batch. So our first study had one diet batch, and our second, and this was our third, the second and third shared the same diet batch. So they had undergone the same processing, they had undergone everything. The differences in the bioavailability for both the peas and chicken meal when it was from the same diet batch was about 5% different from each other.
Okay.
So it was incredibly repeatable the ingredients underwent the same process.
Okay, great.
So it did produce repeatable results, which was really great. So we're still in the process of trying to figure out, I think that's the next step, kind of to go into that next part, is trying to figure out what the ideal reference diet formulation would be, considering what we do and don't know about amino acid requirements in dogs specifically. But that's I think the future direction, but we made it work, and we got some really cool results.
So that's exciting. So you think with all the future work, it's going to be a very useful technology. Absolutely. For the future, correct?
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you so much. So that kind of ends up our, we're coming close to the recording. So thank you so much for being here. So welcome. Thank you so much, Dr. Michaela Crosby, who talked to us about bioavailability of amino acids. So that concludes another episode of the Pet Food Science Podcast, presented to you by Wisenetics. Thank you for joining us today. Don't forget to subscribe to be aware of future episodes. Please also leave us some feedback so we know what topics are of interest to you. And until next time, this is Jan Sokodolski from the Pet Food Science Podcast signing off. Bye-bye.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent without a time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on more $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.